think I did too, I don't stop.
You want up there?
Come on over and help with it, what's it over here? Let me see, what I have in mind, I have talked from time to time with, Lou Harris, and Senator, Jay County, but not that the Gallup people and so forth. And, the purpose, which I'm sure you understand, is not for the purpose of them, talking about, how the elections and so forth are gonna come out. I tried to get an ISD question.
ISD?
ISD question. But, what I'm really interested in is, Stan is now in line to talk to. I'm interested in what really runs beneath the surface, what the trends are, why it's happening. Thing that I would particularly like to, you know, get any feelings you had on or observations is, and I know you're the pieces that have been carried here, Star, but, what has happened, say, since 1968, 1972, to turn around the country's attitudes on a number of things. I was before you came to the house, I was rather thinking, this is Bob Halton, you met him.
No, I haven't, sir.
I was thinking about 1968, let me get the proposition. August of 1969, thanks to Pat Moynihan's brilliant, creative thinking on this thing, we came up with what we thought was a much-needed new program in the community welfare. It provided family assistance. It was in margins that we could afford. It was also provided work requirements and the rest. We thought that providing ways of on welfare to work, made sure the people that worked didn't get less than people on welfare, and so forth and so on. And at the time that was proposed, we pulled, not only we pulled Harris and Kelton, everybody pulled, showed around 65-70% of the people were for it at that time. Now, that was immediately after I made the speech. After I made the speech, I made a speech about it. I think probably they were paying more attention to the workfare part of it than they were to the assistance part, if you broke it down. The point that I make is that, and then in 1969, rioters in numbers of 250,000, 300,000 marching around the Capitol. You had attitudes on with regard to war, with regard to national defense, with the U.S. role in the world, which were basically funds are there, if they are, they can be. And unless they're smart enough to know how to work there, it'd be something that they aren't, or depending on. But anyway, the point is, what do you, I'd like you to sort of, if you would, to get your feel, apart from what you found, you know, in your surveys, why has it happened? If it has happened, to what extent has it happened? What's working the surveys? In other words, some would say, well, there's the problem of race, there's the problem of taxes, there's the problem of the work ethic, there's the problem that people have a little bit more the sense of pride, you know, call it jingoism or whatever. But, how do you see the whole
shape of it? How do you go?
Yeah, shape of it. Well, which has to do with the work ethic and the rest. People saying, well, shape up or get off and the line. But my point is, it's not what you found. I wish you'd run through that. But why? What happened? Why does the country turn like that? And let me conclude with this. A very interesting talk with Alan Kuhn the other day, which you know, if it hadn't been for his rather dilettante manner, would probably be prime minister today and probably would be more effective than he was involved. We were talking about Britain and its problems, and Britain may have had a question at the present time, being that they do not have these interests in the United States. We just don't have the discipline of our labor force. Made a very interesting observation and said, you know, it's interesting to note here. George Meade came over and met with our secretary of our general labor group recently. She just said after me and I had some confrontation in Miami, and he was explaining how he'd done something. And so I said, why did you do it? She said, because I gave my word to the president. And he says, they never do that with us. Of course, they might do it with the labor government. The point that he makes is that discipline in Britain. And as a result, they've got this runaway inflation and due to a wage cost push in enormous proportions. But that's not the important. We had some serious inflation problem with the wage cost push in this construction area. But it wasn't just the imposition of controls that stopped that. The controls aren't worth a damn unless people are willing to adhere to them. And they were willing to adhere to them. And labor, of course, among the best, even though they bitched on them about them. Which is quite a credit to these fellows. Well, I digress. But if you'd, I'd like to get your feel of what's happening in this country. And one last thing, why have so many of, if I may use the term, of your colleagues in the Eastern establishment not seen it and don't even still recognize it? Why is it that when you go down the line, I'm referring to the news magazines, the Time, the Newsweek, to the three networks, etc. Needless to say, the Washington Post
and Alaska did not read my stories.
No.
That's the truth.
But now there's something wrong there. They're living out their hero.
You see, once the World Telegram died, I've had no New York City outlet. I get published by Long Island Press, which is out in part of Jamaica, in a part of Long Island. But all the so-called opinion makers, they don't see this copy at all. And I'm published in all the suburbs and all this, but I'm not in the New York Times. You see, you only
sure, have star here.
Yeah, and I only have 2.5 newspapers in New York City. And the World Telegram used to run my stories, and this meant that everybody in New York saw my stories and
yeah.
Made a great deal of difference. Now here, the Star is, they have great internal problems, and they have been burying some of my stories and cutting them, and I don't understand, because basically I know what I set out to do, and nobody works any harder than I do. I think I succeed, but I'm always looking for the change from one election to the next, and I work at it. And there isn't a paragraph in any one of my stories that doesn't have a place there. You see, they're all tightly written. And many of the answers, questions you raise would be really answered if everybody's read them carefully. Now, this Washington Post is running a series now, which to me is meaningless. Because
here's
a piece that is. Well, I get the impression that I know that individually he's a very competent they're writing that the election as if the campaigns have started when the governor got the nomination, which is a little silly, because there, by that time, it's questionable whether any Democrat could not conduct some of the campaigns. And they also are trying to reduce this to a matter of personalities, and say that this is a choice of two men. Well, and this is kind of, it's really silly in the sense that obviously because you vote on a man, but people vote only on the man that they identify with, and they identify with that man on the basis of reading into that person their own interests and their own concerns. You see, I've used the term mentally, that everybody's a selection machine. Human selection machine. Everybody's tuning out all the time, and they tune in. And the whole business is to understand the psychology of selection. Now, there isn't anybody, if you listen to everything that was thrown at you, you'd go crazy. It's a highly defensive, this is the secret weapon that the voters have against all the politicians. They don't listen. And when they do listen, they try to translate it down to their own level.
They just turn out if they don't. But if it doesn't relate to them,
it's just as you don't hear police alarm, you don't hear all kinds of sounds around you because you've tuned them out, and then suddenly you pick up sounds that interest you. Now you haven't consciously decided, and also when you pass through the crowd, you pass all sorts of faces, and you picked up and stopped one face. Now this is the normal way that. And I'm sure that the psychologists have good explanations of it. I've learned this over the years. It's probably been how people reacted. And so when they start saying people are turned off or something, this is, I mean, again, this is how they react normally. The thing is, why are they turned off and how are they tuning? And what are they tuning in and what are they tuning out? All right, now, basically, so every election you can say is a personality thing, but this notion, I've used the phrase, and I did one of these earlier, here, that charisma is seeing yourself in the mirror. You see, a politician has charisma if you see your own interest in it, and this politician also has credibility. If you agree with him. But basically, even with his great popularity, you know, a lot of reporters would like to write about a father image and all this other thing, but basically, they always drew this distinction. They were for him for peace, and they didn't listen to him when he said anything about foreign policy, and that's why. And I've had any number of people who would say, I'm going to vote for him, but then I'm going to vote for Democrats to keep farm prices up, or something of this sort. They did this consciously.
That's why in 56, with a 17-point margin over Stevenson, he failed here, we failed here in the House and Senate. Right? They voted for the House. Remember that? It was impossible. In fact, that's the first time a president has ever won with that kind of a margin and not carried the House and Senate. Right? And we weren't starting too low. After 54, we were in fairly good shape.
Right, we're losing seats to Obama.
We did.
That all kicked out of us.
Plus,
that's he was losing. I once did a count, but I think he lost 18 seats or something like that. All by himself. Well, anyway, this whole, so I have never, I don't buy. The man is important, but you can't separate any political personality from the issues that, and the positions he's taken and how he seems to people and how people identify and lead into him. So when you come out with a series that says people are voting on their on personalities, this becomes meaningless. Because I tell you the truth, if the government doesn't say anything, people will vote for what they want him to be, to stand for, and they'll proceed to read their interest into him if he kept quiet. And they would vote accordingly, because this is the nature of voting. People attach, you see, the candidates are already manipulating the voters. And the voters manipulate the candidates that they have, whatever the choice is. And if they feel strongly about something, they're going to attach it to someone. And if they only have a choice of McGovern and you, and they feel strongly about it, and they can't attach it to you, they'll attach it to McGovern. And it doesn't make any difference whether he knows they're doing it even, because they will do this. You see? And the same way, if they feel strongly about something, they will attach it to you. You see, this is the process that the voter does. Regardless of the campaign, I did most of the campaigns, I did a little funny research I brought along in the Star Wars about how to solve a Watergate problem. And I said my solution was I thought this idea of reconciliation. I wasn't going to win me a Nobel Peace Prize or even get me a State Department job, but I said I thought that all of 10 million bucks should be given over to worthy charities of Democrats choosing. I said that this is such bipartisan benevolence, you see, with Republicans putting up the money, the Democrats naming who was going to get it, was the best income distribution plan that anybody had proposed. But basically, the public in itself, they feel they have always their own concerns. And if they feel strongly about anything, they will find a way of expressing it. And they are limited, you see. Now, the great thing you see that, you know, happened in 1968 was people were using Wallace as a temporary way station before they made up their minds about the final election, because they were trying to get a message over to the politicians, pay attention to us. And when I was interviewing then, I always asked people, who do you, of the two candidates, who do you dislike most, and if he looked like he was going to win, which way would you go? On this basis, they could figure out that in the North, when the bread came, they would go for country, and in the South, they would go for you. And the last story that I sent out, when Johnson announced his bombing clause, I said this would be neutralized, because the Wallace vote would break according on both sides, you know, and would not have any great effect, because my judgment was that this would, that if there was any breaking, you see, the Wallace vote was ready to break. And the very fact that it looked, in the South, it looked like Humphrey was going to pick up votes, more Wallaceites would then break over and come over to your side. And in reverse, you see, and this was the way the vote was poised at the end of the 68 election. So I did not see just doing anything, but it was always in the picture. Now, in this election, there may two-party choice. See, there are very little, there, and there is, and this gives it a different flavor in that, you know, in the sense of the salt. Now, I don't know, when you talk about, you're going to have to bring me back to the parts of major concern, your major concern. You mentioned this welfare plan, and you say that the survey has Gallup showed that it's done for. I don't know what questions they were asking. I was doing some interviewing for Nelson Rockefeller during the 68 campaign when he was trying to beat you. And one of the things at that time was this, with, you know, the idea of guaranteed annual income. And I told him, you get off that, you can't win. Because if you, as soon as you raise this, people then bring up Social Security and they want their share, and you'd have to have a general increase of everything in order to bring it through. And the only way, if you want to bring this in, is just say you want to make jobs for people so they can work their way off welfare. And this was the position he took. But there was never, you see, this has always been tied in to the minds of the voters, right, that they, you see, one of the things about welfare, and this showed up in the 68 election, they're critical about welfare, but they're envious by what these people get. And they want it themselves. So if you start giving them, if you start giving them something under a welfare plan, you have to match it. And this was the point that I made, this was in 68. I just said, this is, you can't put together, you can't put across and get acceptance for a guaranteed annual income unless it's part of a general, you have to increase Social Security, you have to increase everything for it, because there's a competitive aspect, just as there's a competitive aspect in people's thinking about the private economy, there's a competitive aspect in people's thinking about the public economy. And they often compare themselves. If somebody is getting something, they want theirs. You see, this is the dynamics, and it shows up steadily in this, and it's been in this picture. And I don't, one of the things that you can, in polling, the main question is really how, it's not the wording of the question, but whether the questions that are asked make sense in terms of the dynamics of the feelings of people. And the worst thing, the worst kind of poll there is to get a single question put on a problem that can't be answered with a single question, and these polls are all wrong. And whenever you see a single question, it's a very dangerous, tricky thing, because...
Like, do you approve or disapprove of the president's plan to do this or that or the other thing? You get a wrong answer.
If it isn't a single... You see, now, you can get a single answer, you can get an answer, you can say, you approve, should capital punishment be kept or abolished? You get pretty good answers on that. But if you ask them, how do you feel about what we're going to do in Vietnam, president's policy of Vietnam, you find out very quickly there's no agreement on what the president is doing at any various time. It means different things, so you have to ask a whole series of questions to get at it, and this is really one of the great problems of the polls. They do questions and then they proceed to assume that the answer means what they think it means, and they don't really know whether the answer means that in terms of what the voters answer. See, And this is a mistake I have never made, because I do my own interviewing. I only have two assistants, and I worked at it. See, I'm always trying to see what's causing people to change, and I'm sure I made my mistakes, but I know more. I have the advantage that I apply my psychology to the voter while I'm listening to. See, in other words, I know a good deal about how voters think, and they tell me things by things that they see, if people have information, I don't regard this as a matter of intelligence. I think this shows their interest. People throw away information unless they're interested. If they have information, it's evidence of interest. Now, in the 1960 primaries, you see, between Kennedy and Humphrey in Wisconsin, a lot of people told me they were undecided, and I asked them, well, have you read up about Kennedy? And then they told me that they would read about him, and I would check, and invariably the Catholics were reading up about Kennedy in the process, reading up about Humphrey. And this meant that they were predisposed towards that candidate. So there are a lot of them. But anyway, what do you want to know about this work ethic? It, at present, it is the carrier, the welfare feeling, is the carrier of, and I wrote a piece on this, and there's a lot in there. It's the carrier of racial feelings, it's the carrier of economic feelings, and it's the carrier also of the general frustration that, and so to be implicit that this is the most vulnerable that people, when they talk about it, think entirely of it referred to black people. They're very unhappy because they start talking about it, and then immediately the next thing they talk about is blacks. The people who support welfare always bring up their own family experience, and there's a good deal of this. Now, I've gotten more letters from people writing in on the welfare thing. And some of them are very moving, and they just tell their own stories about and it had 4 or 5 pages of handwritten thing to explain it. And it's all in, they're very thoughtful. And they explain what welfare means to them. They explain that they have this sickness, and they're putting through their husband has left them, they're trying to put through at least one of their kids is now gone.